Ladies and gentlemen, live from the West Coast, it's time for Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Your inside look into combat sports.
Ring Talk Live Worldwide, brought to you by the WBC, the World Boxing Council.
It is absolutely necessary that we all get together. We work together. We respect each other. We like and love each other.
And now, the host of the longest-running fight show in radio and internet history.
I'm getting tired of people running from me in the ring. Mike Tyson, Holyfield, you a bunch of bums. Stand up and be a man and fight a real fighter.
Pedro Fernandez.
Damas y caballeros, bienvenidos, ladies and gentlemen. Emanating, coming at you from the multi-million dollar Sports Byline Studios. Check it. This is Ring Talk Live Worldwide on WBC TV. Often imitated but hardly duplicated, 37 make that 38 plus years now of knocking out all bums. Straight up, happy new year 2022. My name is Pedro Fernandez. This is Ring Talk Live Worldwide, of course, coming to you live on Twitch.tv, the Sports Byline USA channel, delayed on VTV. Straight up, we're all over the place video-wise, but this is the longest-running fight show in history. 37 make that 38 plus years now of knocking out all bums. Why do I say that? Because we're all alone. I'm so alone. I'm so far ahead of everybody else, I get lonesome. Straight up, I was the original podcast back in 1992. We hit the internet, did live radio from the People's Republic of China on the internet back in 1993. All kinds of precedent set on this show as far as broadcasting. Of course, wow, the People's Republic of China, I can go on and on, but we went to actually 34 countries around the world, broadcast from 17 of them. So straight up, Ring Talk Live Worldwide has got a bit of history on its side, but you know what? We're looking forward to the future. This is 2022. Boxing is alive and well, of course, and we've got a pay-per-view card tonight on pay-per-view, and Scott Cuddy, my producer, tells me that this card is a unique pay-per-view card. They will pay you to watch it. Pay-per-view. Pay-per-view. They will pay you to watch it. That's what he's telling me. Straight up, we'll hear more on the other side of the break. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Tower to the break. Ring Talk Live Worldwide, brought to you by the WBC, the World Boxing Council.
Back in high school, I was the best that I could be. Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
Hardest hustle anything is boxing, though. I don't know what you do for a living, but pretty sure ain't nobody punching you all in your eye. I watched one fight. Roy Jones got hit so hard, my TV moved. He was asleep like he got knocked out of the club. The ref was like 241, 242. Roy was snoring. He was really knocked out. He was laying there so long, they had to start another fight. Roy was still there. Fighters had to dance around Roy.
Earthquake, talking about Roy Jones. Of course, Roy Jones and Mike Tyson starting the year off with the exhibition, per se. Of course, Roy Jones coming with bigger breasts than a lot of the girls that I've dated in my life. But, you know, it was Roy. Of course, Roy is, have you forgot? That's what he used to say. Have you forgot? Yeah, I forgot, Roy, because you were the 1988 Olympic silver medalist. Of course, jobbed out of the Olympic gold medal when you lost to the Korean. Of course, that was a bit of a ripoff, no doubt about that. But pound for pound, Roy Jones was one of the best. Of course, he came back this year, sort of embarrassed himself up against Mike Tyson. Mike Tyson could have put him out of his misery. I mean, like, put him out of his misery, and he didn't. He just played with him and toyed with him for a few rounds. But what I'm leading to is later in the year, of course, Oscar De La Hoya was supposed to take on Vitor Belfort. Remember Vitor Belfort? You didn't know him? He was like the phenom, the teenage phenom from the UFC out of Brazil about 15 years ago. Anyway, 15 or 20 years ago. I think he's like 43 or 44 years old. So he's not a boxer per se. He's an MMA fighter, but he's in good shape and the guy can crack with his hands. So he was supposed to fight Oscar De La Hoya. And then all of a sudden, Oscar De La Hoya got, you know, stage fright. He got scared. I mean, the guy started freaking out, and you can't blame him because he realized if Vitor Belfort is coming down from 200 pounds, and this guy hits hard, he hits like a rock, okay? So you're not going to be able to stop him. Not with a pair of 10-ounce boxing gloves or a pair of 8-ounce boxing gloves. No, I didn't think so, okay? So anyway, Oscar pulls out of the fight, says he has COVID, says he has this, but yet he's granting interviews in the hospital. Imagine this, having COVID, but I've got enough time to give interviews in the hospital. So De La Hoya is giving these interviews in the hospital. No, he wasn't in drag this time, but he was giving these interviews in the hospital like, you know, I can't fight. You know, I wanted to fight. I can't do this, blah, 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 blah. So instead, Evander Holyfield steps in. The real deal. The guy I met in 1984, May 1984, was sitting at the Olympic Training Center in Colorado Springs, and I'm green as guacamole, and I mean, I'm just lucky and fortunate to be hanging with these elite guys in the amateur boxing world, okay? So I sit down, and I've already ran that morning. I'm a little grumpy, this and that. You know, I've already ran and worked out, so I'm going to eat my lunch. And I said to him, like, oh, the pancakes are stale. And he said something to the point where, be glad you got food. You know, something like some holy type of thing. And I didn't know he was Evander Holyfield, like, going to be this God type of guy later in life. Anyway, he told me to stop complaining, blah, 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 blah. Of course, he got up and ran with us at 5:30 in the morning. Henry Tillman, the gold medalist from 1984, he didn't get up and run with us in the morning. Henry got up at noon. But Evander got up, like, at 5:30 and ran with us at 5:30. And somebody said to me, I've been running this week in the San Francisco cold. And it's been 41, 42 degrees. This is nothing. You got to run in Billings, Montana. Billings, Montana. Run in Billings, Montana in the cold. Okay? Or Chicago. No, I didn't run in Chicago. I ran in Chicago on my own. But as far as fighting's concerned, well, Colorado Springs, Reno, Las Vegas, Mount Charleston, Las Vegas, I think was the coldest I've ever ran in my life because I didn't know how far it was to the top. The first time, I had no idea how far it was to top. All I knew was that there was a truck waiting for me at the top of this hill, and somehow I had to make it straight up. The cold. Now, Amanda knows something about the cold, because I think it's a little bit cold in the Bronx. Talk about the Bronx bomber himself, Mr. Socrates Palmer. Is it cold back there, Holmes?
It's actually unseasonably warm. It's about mid-50s, so it's not terrible, but we have some rain.
Okay, so we got problems out here when it's, you know, in the 40s. You know that, right? People don't even...
Have they called in a National Guard?
Well, just about, man. It's like, you're right. It's like people just freaking out. Anyway, tonight there's a unique card on boxing, and maybe Cuddy's now explained this to me, his version. I want to maybe get your take on, of course, Socrates Palmer being boxing's PhD. There's a card on pay-per-view tonight, and I was told this is a new form of pay-per-view where they're going to entice the viewer to watch by paying you to watch the card. In other words, if it's pay-per-view, pay-per-view. Are you seeing where I'm going with this? Pay-per-view?
That would probably be the only way this makes sense.
Well, I mean, let's be honest. I'm looking at the card, and you know, I mean, Luis Ortiz is like 38-2, but he's like 45 years old. And let's be honest, right. I mean, he's a good fighter. He was a good heavyweight at one point in time. Wasn't enough to win the title or anything like that, but he was a good heavyweight. But I don't think that him and, is it Charles Martin that he's taking on? You know, Charles Martin's like another unknown guy. And then you've got Gerard Washington on the card. Is it Gerald or Gerald? Yeah. He's as old, I don't think I said this before, I'm being redundant, but isn't he related to George Washington, like a brother?
Yeah, I mean, he's probably as stiff as that cherry tree that George cut down so famously.
And he's 6'6". So talk about a guy that's easy to chop down, but go on.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about a guy, don't judge a book by its cover. The guy, you know, when in his prime, like a few years ago, built like an Adonis, like you said, 6'6", ripped. I believe he was a former football player who got into boxing late.
USC.
You know, it's a shame. I mean, you kind of have the sports audience to yourself, or at least the boxing audience to yourself. Why not put this on Fox or on regular TV? I mean, this on pay-per-view is absurd.
Okay, let's do numbers here. Ortiz, 32-2. Martin, 28-2. With a draw. Frank Sanchez, 19-0. Christian Hammer, 26-8. Jonathan Rice, 14-5. Michael Coffey, 12-1. Gerald Washington, 20-4 with a draw. And again, Ali Emerson, Demetrian, anyway, he's 14-1. Those are the first four fights as far as this pay-per-view is concerned. It's called an all-heavyweight pay-per-view. They put 15, like 12 fights on the live card. More props to them as far as the live card is concerned. But this is going to be a tough one. I mean, as far as making money is concerned, this would be another one of those cars where it gets stolen more often than it gets bought. Speaking of a guy that took a little heat here, my man, Jake Paul, my new hero unboxing. The reason why I say that, because he pays people. He pays people. People don't understand this. Fighters don't get paid. They don't nearly make enough money for their what they do, for the damage which their body has to go through, okay, especially UFC. But Jake Paul pays people. Evidently, Jake Paul's pay-per-view numbers weren't all that great last week as far as the actual pay-per-view numbers were concerned. People call him like an ordering on Fox TV and things like that. But where he gets his niche is from the online people that watch him. Online, I mean, that's where his numbers are going to come in.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I am definitely, I've done a 360 on this Jake Paul boxing experiment or experience, however you want to phrase it. The guy is good for the sport. I mean, he is, you know, knocking out people that he probably shouldn't, you know, and he's doing it in spectacular fashion. But like you said, he's getting fighters paid. You know, Amanda Serrano made probably the biggest check of her career.
$275,000, and I called her Amanda Nunes last week, but $275,000, and the most he's probably made before is 25 at the max, I would have to say.
And the other thing that came out this week, he's got this charity that he's helping out local gyms in Puerto Rico, and in Ohio where he's from. I mean, It's hard to knock stuff like that. Now he's over the top and you know, but he's also very young when he did all those clout chasing videos, you know, but I think we're seeing, I'm not going to say the future of the sport, but at least there's a 12-year-old out there that's interested in boxing because of Jake Paul. And to me, that's a good thing.
Good point. Socrates Palmer is our guest, of course, talking about Jake Paul. Jake Paul being the YouTube phenom and having done all kinds of numbers. And I don't know if I told you this, but the first pay-per-view card that he had, the first Woodley fight, he gave $1 million to the undercard. And there was 10 fighters on the undercard. They got $100,000 each. And if they split it up evenly, they got $100,000 each.
Hey, at the end of the day, that's the name of the game, to get paid, you know, to, you know, put food on your table. And like you said, fighters aren't compensated. They're what they should be worth. I mean, they're literally risking their health every single time they step in that ring.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up. El Pollo Oscar, because, you know, backing out of the Vitor Belfort fight, you're not hearing too much about Oscar fighting anymore, are you?
Yeah, that kind of slowed down. that whole thriller, no, you know, I stand corrected. They have something new now, the triad or whatever. And
yeah.
They're fighting in like this triangle or whatever, something like that. And yeah, I don't know what happened to Oscar with the comeback. And then when he first came out, he said that that this was a comeback and not exhibition. So I don't know, some sense must have hit Oscar somewhere.
Well, I got news for you. He saw how Vitor Belfort hunted down Evander Holyfield and realized he would have been duck soup. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide and WBC TV, of course, coming to you live on twitch.tv, the Sports Byline USA channel. My name is Pedro Friend and is back with Boxing's PAC, Socrates Palmer, after the break. Just like the story of Adam and Eve. Perfect love was all that I was living for. The sun was turning outside. She came near, she whispered in my ear. She seemed to know the reason why. She said, a little knowledge is a dangerous thing.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
But I want to start getting paid. I want to start making heavyweight money.
If you saw Dana White, what he just said about, you know, the fighters sharing in the pay-per-view, his nose and his ears grew at the same time as he was saying this on TV. You can just watch the video. I kid you not. His nose and his ears were just growing as he spoke. fighters get to share in the percentage of the pay-per-view. Very few of the fighters share in the percentage of the pay-per-view as far as the UFC is concerned. And my knock on them is there's no easy fights. In other words, if you get an easy fight, you're still getting your ass kicked to any extent. You're still taking some bumps, some bruises, this and that. No way. Put it this way. In boxing, you need work fights in order to develop your product. In other words, to make your guy get him some confidence and say, you have these different work fights and they're built along the way. In other words, you put this guy in for that, for stamina. You put this guy in because he's got a great chin. He's never been knocked out. You want to see if your guy can knock him out. You've got all these little different criteria you put your fighter through. But in the UFC, you just get pimped off, you get beat up, and before you know it, you're done. Amanda Nunes, I mentioned her a little bit earlier. She was an upset loser a couple of weeks ago, a fortnight ago. Of course, the best woman in women's pay-per-view, as far, women's MMA as far as history is concerned. But yet she got beat by somebody she wasn't supposed to get beat by. Why? Because you never know in the world of MMA. Straight up, back to the phone lines. Bronx Bomber, of course, come to us from the Bronx. Socrates Bomber. Sock, this guy Makubu, that the Cruiserweight champion that Canelo's going to fight, who wants to see that besides Makubu's family and maybe some of Canelo's family?
You know what? Canelo is must-watch TV. And is it history that he's making? Yeah. But he is cherry-picking maybe the softest of the cruiserweight
Are you trying to tell me that I don't know. Here's what's up. Let's change subjects for a second from Canelo, because Canelo's not fighter of the year in my mind. It's either going to be Nonito Lunaire, of course, the 38-year-old that came back with two great wins this year, one capturing the WBC 118-pound title against an undefeated novice, in my mind. I can't remember the guy's name, to be exact. And then, of course, we shift gears, and he won against his Filipino compatriot a couple of weeks ago or a fortnight ago with a big body shot. So what am I trying to tell you is that it's either Donaire or Kambosos, in my mind. Who would be the fighter of the year in your mind, Sock?
Well, I mean, the fighter that had the most eyes on him throughout the year had, you know, is Canelo. So I would probably lean towards Canelo just
you
because.
You can't give him the award every year, though, man. You can't give him the award every year.
It's like the LeBron James, Michael Jordan MVP, right? You can give it to him any year as long as they're in the league. All right. Other than Canelo, Kambosos shocked the world, man. That was he really did. Really trying to think.
Donaire was, he wasn't expected to prevail the way in the manner in which he has, and he's 38 years old and he's making 118 pounds, and he was probably at best a flyweight back on July 7, 2007 when he knocked out Victor Chinian.
Yeah. It's Josh Taylor.
That might be a bit of a rush. A reach. Anyway, Josh Taylor, I think, is mostly everybody like, he poo-poos him, and I think you're doing the wrong thing by poo-pooing him. Hey, back to Jake Paul. Jake Paul offered Chavez $3 million. J.C. Chavez Jr. won last week a 10-round decision, 175 pounds. But, hey, $3 million, Chavez and him, they could do some pay-per-view numbers, I think.
You know what? I think it'll probably be the first time in a long time that Chavez will have people rooting for him, because there's a huge Jake Paul's a polarizing person. Mm-hmm. You know, you and I like him, but for every person that likes him, there's about 10 that hate him. It would be the first time he fights an actual professional boxer, so that's very intriguing. But then again, Chavez Jr. is probably the least motivated professional fighter
I think he's trying to. I would think he's the least motivated. I think he's got some issues as far as his discipline is concerned, because he broke in at 154, maybe 147. Now he's fighting at 175, which I think is above his weight. But I will say this: his father is on his case, and when he doesn't perform well, his father criticizes him severely in the Mexican press. I mean, he's brutal. He is brutal, and he wasn't brutal after the last fight, and maybe he can get it together. And him and Jake Paul, I think, would make for a good match as far as pay-per-view is concerned, and they'd definitely do some numbers, no doubt about that. Now, what's up with Mr. Charlo? Is Mr. Charlo all alone at 160 pounds? I mean, he keeps saying he wants Canelo to come to 160 and fight him. Is he dreaming? Is he living in another world? Is he smoking angel dust and not weed or what?
I think that he is ruining his career in terms of his legacy. I mean, earlier I said it's about getting paid. And I guess Mr. Charlo's happy. He's content. I think it's a pipe dream. I don't think we'll ever see Canelo at 160 pounds again. And if he wants a Canelo fight, he wants to hit the lottery. That's a long line. You know, does he want a big fight? I mean, there's a guy named Benavidez who fights in the same promotional company as you. You know, that's an interesting fight. Mm-hmm. But I don't think Mr. Charlo's interested in making big fights. I think he's maybe just going to fight whoever his annual mandatory.
He sort of fights with training wheels. Do you know what I mean by that?
In other words, break it down for me, sir.
In other words, he's not going to fall over in the fights that he's having. In other words, he's going to ride straight through. I mean, there's probably no doubt about it. The fights he's in, he's going to win. I mean, there's never been a fight where we say, well, maybe Charlo's going to lose here. And this thing. Not really. He hasn't put in a fight where he's had to, we've had to guess as to whether he's going to win or lose, which means he's been a prohibitive favorite each time. And I'm sort of down on that. Switching gears, Terrence Crawford, 39-0 now. A lot of numbers, but he has no great names on his resume. Are numbers enough?
I think he's got some. His performance against Sean Porter was
okay.
Was pretty impressive. I mean, no one's done that to Sean Porter.
Good point.
You know, there's also rumors that he may be signing it back with Top Rank. You know, it's a weird assessment. I don't know if he's overvaluing himself. People thought that, okay, he's a free agent. The Errol Spence fight, there should be no obstacles. Mm. And now it seems like that's not going to happen right away. And like I said, I had read that there is a possibility that he re-signs the Top Rank. I don't know. You know, Terrence is a great fighter. He's definitely in the conversation for the top three or four best in the world.
How come he doesn't have the glamour to him? I mean, in other words, you know, when the welterweight champion of the world fought, when Ray Leonard fought, man, the world stopped. You know what I'm saying? When Terrence Crawford fights, the world don't even come to a slow stop. I mean, the world doesn't take all that notice. What I'm trying to tell you is, if you're 40-0, he's got almost 40 fights now. He's like 34 years old. You know, when does greatness come? And is are numbers enough? And I've said that before. Are numbers enough? Don't you have to beat somebody great to be considered great? And as far as his greatness is concerned, I mean, he beat Sean Porter without a doubt. So he's coming off his best win. But where's he mm-hmm. going to go from here? I mean, instead of making a deal with Spence, the deal is there to be made. He was a free agent right there for a while. The deal was there to be made. He could have made the deal, okay? And it wasn't made. So there's some reluctance on his part. Has to be.
Yeah, listen, we can only speculate that. I mean, there was no excuse that basically right now you and I should be talking about a fight date announced between him and Spence for March, mm-hmm. something like that. You know, we should be counting down and say, okay, we're finally going to find out who's the best welterweight in the world. You know, no BS, and we're not there. So, you know, Bob had said before that he doesn't really make money off of Terrence Crawford, and maybe he's right. Now, I've been to the Garden, you know, where Terrence Crawford fights, and it's a good crowd.
Yeah, but, you know, let me tell you something about that. When I did club shows, I used to count the people in the audience. In other words, it's like it'd be 1,000. I had 1,100, right? And I counted the black people that bought tickets, and there were only like 52 people out of 1,000 that had bought tickets were actually black boxing fans. So what I'm trying to tell you is that it doesn't look like that demographic buys tickets.
You're 100% right. You're right. There's no secret, you know, and listen, it's been said before, the hardest thing to promote is a non-heavyweight black fighter, American fighter. You know, it's just, black American people just don't buy tickets as the way they should, you know, like other ethnicities.
Real quick, in 30 seconds, Canelo is not going to fight Mr. Beterbiev anytime soon, even though he's 37, huh?
I don't think so. I think it's a smart move. Probably wait till Beterbiev is about 40.
45. Socrates Palmer, happy new year to you and the family. Say hello to your agent for me. Give her my best. And I saw she sent me a fax the other day. I'll be checking it out. Tell her I'll get back to her soon.
All right. Do so. She's very on point.
Yeah, I know. Brother. I know. No doubt about that. Say hello to Ms. Palmer for me. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Your inside look in the world of boxing.
Room that really gives a rat's about candlelight dinners. Women seem to think we like them, but you know, it's never our idea. I mean, does he have them with his friends and you're not around? Absolutely not. During the Super Bowl, okay, Bob, you get the Doritos, I'll get the candles. First down, yes! You make a candlelight dinner for a guy, believe me, he's sitting there squirming in his chair. I can't see the goddamn potato, this sucks. The hell did she make? What is this, a turd, a piece of corn? Honey, at least put on the TV, get some light over here. So romantic. It's right up there with taking a bath or a shower together. Cannot tell you how many times I'll come home at night, the wife will have a little bath made. She doesn't get it. She'll have candles in the bathroom like some kind of voodoo sacrifice. What are you doing?
Oh, I made us a bath.
You made us a bath. You ever see me take a bath? No. I don't take a bath. I can't even get my own fat butt in the tub without my feet halfway up the wall. We've tried this before. It doesn't work. I always get the side with the faucet in my back. Ow! Yeah, honey, I'd love to get a hard-on. There doesn't seem to be any room. Taking a shower together. That really sucks, fellas. See, women like that because they're the ones under the hot water. We're standing there like a moron with a shriveled up f***ing sump on our face. This is terrific, honey. I got no penis. I got shampoo in my eyes. Let me know when there's no more hot water. It'll be my turn. I'll be right over here. I'm cold. I'm naked. My f*** looks like a stack of buttons.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
This is something new from the Tower of Power. Check them out, towerofpower.com. Them horns, man, they're funky, aren't they? No doubt about that. One of a kind. The Godfathers, the East Bay Soul Godfathers, no doubt about that. Tower of Power. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. You're inside looking to the world of boxing and MMA. Of course, we talk a little MMA. Straight up, the UFC is on vacation, I think, until January 15th. The 22nd, they've got a big fight with Gane, who's one of their heavyweight title holders, against Francis Ngannou, who's probably the most awesome heavyweight I've ever seen in my entire life as far as boxing and MMA is concerned. Yes, I think he can make the crossover because this was a guy that was originally a boxer, okay? And he doesn't have to be fast. All he has to do is hit you hard. That's how hard he hits. So he's hitting guys with 4-ounce gloves, and he's putting them away, okay? But if he hits guys with 8-ounce gloves, he will put them away as well. So why isn't there a move from Ngannou to go from MMA to boxing? Because that's really where the money's at. I mean, come on. This guy Woodley, Tyron Woodley. Of course, him fighting Jake Paul twice, he made more money in those two fights with Jake Paul than he ever made with the UFC. Come on, man. You can't. Wait, time out. He was a UFC champion. He made more money in two fights with Jake Paul than he made in his entire UFC career as a champion. What kind of spit is that? And when I say spit on this show, it usually means spit with an H. Okay? I mean, come on, man. But that's Dana. Dana's a pimp. And I told you this before, you know, when I was a cop here in San Francisco, I knew some pimps. Leon was good to them. But I knew some good pimps. And when I say good pimps, it was they ran their business right. There was no trouble involved. Not no dope. Nothing. I mean, there was a business to these guys. A business. It was a business to these guys. Okay? So anyway, I used to watch these guys and because I was a cop and, you know, they was like, the other side of the law, sort of like black market sex and that kind of good stuff. It's still going on here in San Francisco, all over the place. They just now put it in massage parlors. It's on Craigslist. It used to be on Craigslist, not anymore. But, you know, I got to tell you, when you look at the entire picture, you know, as far as the current status of boxing is concerned and MMA and the fact that boxers are getting paid and MMA fighters aren't. I mean, Dana's talking about, oh, you know, the pay-per-view, they share. No, they don't share an attendance percentage of the pay-per-view. And what I'm trying to tell you is when you're a boxer like I am or I was, they would send me down to mid parts of California and fight guys that I was sort of ashamed of. Because, you know, these guys would come in like 133 pounds, and I'd be like 144, and they didn't make the fight. I wasn't saying nothing. I wasn't, but 10 pounds, I'd have like 8 or 10 pounds with some of these guys, and then I had the skill levels a little bit better than those guys, so and the preparation as far as, you know, endurance. I mean, you know, I had my team. I was ready to go. They were just guys that boxed, know what I'm saying? So they weren't really of my league, per se, of the same ilk. And now these guys, as far as UFC is concerned, oh, what I'm trying to say is when I went down there, I didn't take any beatings, per se. To get one guy cracked me real good. One good time I got dropped down there, I think in Modesto, and I had to get up off the deck of Modesto and take care of that. But outside of that, I didn't have too much troubles down in the valley, okay? Because of the fact I was getting work fights. What I mean by work fights is I was learning how to do my thing. I wouldn't even tell people sometimes, me and my trainer or me and Howard, when it wasn't Chris Gomez was available, I would take Howard, I would get in the car and I'd drive and we'd smoke a whole lot of weed and drive down to somewhere in Southern California, Central California, and we'd have these, you know, two or three fights, sometimes two or three fights in a weekend. But the bottom line was I was learning how to fight, dealing with the crowds, dealing with adversity, dealing with, you know, having, because you know, this is not your average baseball game. You don't go out there, golly gee whiz, you know, if I don't do well today, I'll have a bad day. I'll strike out a few times. You strike out in boxing, and you're in bad shape. All right, there's no doubt about it. So back to Dana. These fights, there are no work fights for these guys. In other words, if you get a fight against a guy that's supposedly easy, there ain't no easy fights. There's just too many ways to lose. Unless you put a guy in that's like a 1,000-to-1 favorite or something. In other words, you put a guy in that's like so much better than the other guys, there's no doubt about what's going to happen. But that's not the way it goes down in the UFC. In other words, these guys that get broken down week after week in training, get broken, they got to put it up, got to put it down. You get broken down in training, then you have these fights, these work fights. You're supposed to develop yourself as a fighter. This is what you're doing in the early parts of your career. You're developing your skills. You're honing your skills. You're figuring out how much stamina you have, what you can do, what you can't do, this and that. You're not going to hell right away. Okay, but in Dana's world, you go to hell right away because he doesn't want to pay you the money. Get me? He doesn't want to pay you the money. So you go through these ass kickings early on. You know, oh yeah, I'm 14-0 now. But man, you know, the bumps and bruises you took to get to 14-0, but you're 14-0 now. Then you win a title, and guess what? You can only hold on to the title one or two times. Why is that? Because it's part of the form. This is the way Dana designed it. He doesn't want anybody to build legacies. He doesn't want to be able to pay anybody. Look at John Jones. John Jones said, F you with the middle finger, and walked away from the UFC at the pinnacle of his career. Why? Because he was tired of getting pimped off. He's bringing in these big numbers on pay-per-view, and Dana's not giving him the money per se. But then again, Dana says all the fighters share in a percentage of the pay-per-view. They don't. That's a lie. So back to pimping in San Francisco. When Leon and his boys were running those girls out there on the streets of San Francisco in the 80s and 90s, if they were charging $100 for a sexual favor or for a special favor, they weren't taking 90% of it. The pimp wasn't getting 90%. The girl will be on the first bus to Denver, maybe, or L.A. or Modesto. Okay, I kid you not, because you're not going to make some girl work for $100 and then give her 10. But that is the way the UFC program is. You make $100 for the company, and they give you $10 out of that. That's just not too cool. They did $279 million as far as their gross receipts were concerned last year. And they paid approximately, they say 18%, but I haven't seen that yet on paper. So I'm still going to go with the old 8 to 10%, maybe 12% that they were paying the fighters before. But imagine this. If you've got a stable of girls and you're working all these girls in San Francisco or Las Vegas or whatever, and you get to work these girls, and every girl goes out for you, and she makes people happy for $100, and you get to keep 90. This is beyond pimping. That's beyond pimping. Hey, Dana White gives pimps a bad name. That's the best way I can put it. Pound for pound, he's a real clown. Listen, Whitey Bulger, remember him? He was the gangster that was busted down there in Santa Monica, California, living about a mile and a half from Larry Merchant. Of course, Whitey Bulger was the head of the Boston Mafia. He was the head of the Irish Boston Mafia. And he came to Dana White and said, Dana, you got to give me $2,500 a month, because Dana had this punk-ass gym there where Dana was just like this four-round type of trainer type of guy where he put his towel over his head. Oh, I'm a trainer. I'm Dana White. I run this gym. Anyway, he was running this gym, and Whitey Bulger came in and said, you got to give us $2,500 a month. Dana said something to the point where I can't give you $2,500. Anyway, the bottom line is Dana, being the puss that he was, you know what I'm talking about, he put his tail between his legs and he left town. He ran away from Whitey Bulger. Wink, wink, smart move, Dana. That's the smartest thing Dana's ever done in his entire life, was running away from Whitey Bulger. Because what happened was, he went to Las Vegas and he came into He met the Fertitta brothers, Frank and Lorenzo Fertitta. And I mentioned how they amassed millions of dollars, if not billions. They got some money. Of course, it was illegal card clubs back in the 1950s and 60s in and around Dallas, Texas, Harlandale, Texas, places like that. The Fertittas had these illegal card clubs going on. And of course, they legitimized themselves. And then they went to Las Vegas, of course, and bought into the big casinos. They owned the Palace casinos. They owned the Station casinos. And of course, they owned the UFC. They bought the UFC for, I think, $1.4 million. And they sold it, forget this, $4,200 million. Smartest business move in the history of business, okay? Got to give Dana some props for that. No, smart businessman. But he don't pay the people any money. And I still can't get over this. I mean, you got guys going out there and getting their heads handed to them. Women as well, getting their heads handed to them. And, you know, Dana, and these guys, and they brag and they boast and they're all fighting for that lousy $50,000 bonus that Dana's going to give at the end of the night for the fight of the night or the performance tonight like that. And they're all out there willing to give their blood and soul for that lousy 50 grand. Why don't you give them some money to begin with on the top? On the top end, give these guys some money, on these girls some money on the top end, Dana. You're just not doing it, man. You're the worst person in the world as far as, hey, you're the worst person in the world. Well, as far as the world of combat sports is, Dana White is the worst person in the world. No doubt about that. So Alvarez, of course, wants to take on Okubu, the WBC Cruiserweight Champion. And now they're trying to say, Canelo's people are trying to say there's no weight problem here. Of course, they were going to make Okubu come from 200 pounds down to 190. Now they're saying there's no weight restrictions. He can weigh 200 pounds. I don't think this fight's going to happen. I don't want to see this fight. I mean, Canelo making history. Yeah. But I'd rather see Canelo fight the aforementioned Charlo. Of course, Charlo at 160. There's Jamel and there's Jamal. Of course, one's at 154, one's at 160. Basically, neither have made a statement yet as far as their career is concerned. I mean, I talk about, I dog Terrence Crawford, but he's 39-0 and he has beaten a whole lot of credible guys along the way. Not any great guys, but credible guys. The Charlos have yet to beat really, they haven't beat anybody really good yet. So I want to see the Charles step up. I really do. I think that the two brothers having listen, black boxers, I talked about this before, and we mentioned it with Socrates Palmer earlier. Some of them just don't draw. No matter how many belts you put on them or trinkets you put on them or this or that, they just don't draw. It takes a special fighter to draw in the lighter weights as far as if you're an African-American fighter is concerned. Because, you know, guys like Sugar Ray Leonard, they come along once a generation, if that. Okay, so, I mean, Ray was the exception to the rule. Tommy Hearns was the exception to the rule. Marvin Hagler was the exception to the rule. Of course, Marvin, may he rest in peace. I was thinking about Marvin the other day, and I don't know if maybe I'm repeating myself, but we were in Mexico City, and I think we were at a convention. We were at a convention in Mexico City. In fact, one of the last times. I remember spending a long time, a day and a half or 2 days, just hanging around with Alexis Arguello. Anyway, speaking of Alexis, I talked about him in depth this week. But, you know, it's hard to look back. I'm back to, let me stick on Arguello a second. It's hard to look back at Arguello's, you know, the pictures I have of him and his daughter and this and that. And now somebody tried to say that his daughter was part of setting him up for his death and this and that. And we don't know whether he died via his own hand or whether he was killed. I mean, I don't know. And it's 50-50. Why not say it's 50-50? Because most of you or some of you remember that have been around here a long time that in 1999, I think September or August of 1999, Alexis Arguello came on this show and said he wanted to die. Remember that? After his wife said, you know, he's smoking some white stuff out of a can. Huh? That sounds like crack. Yeah, exactly. Alexis heard that, grabbed the phone, said, Pedro, I don't want to live anymore. I want to die, this and that. So, you know, I mean, he was like suicidal. Okay, so what happened? I called Jose Suleiman, Don Jose Suleiman, the president of the World Boxing Council. And I said, Jose, Alexis is in trouble. I need to go help him. What can you do? He goes, well, how much money do you need? I said, I want to put him in rehab. He goes, how much money? I said, probably 40 grand. He goes, okay, I'll wire you $40,000. And he came up with the money. I went down there. I tried to get Alexis into rehab. He wouldn't go. By the end of that year, 1999, Alexis got into a car accident, and the government told him, prison or rehab? He took rehab, and when he saw me at the International Boxing Hall of Fame the next year, he said, this is a man that saved my life. The great Alexis Arguello. You're tuned to Ring Talk and WBC TV.
Ring Talk Live Worldwide, brought to you by the WBC, the World Boxing Council.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
You know, I'm just gushing. I mean, this is New Year's 2022. I usually don't get excited about the new year, but this has been a good year. I mean, if you've come through this year with your health and you're not living in the street and you're eating a decent food, okay, you're doing okay. Believe me, you're doing all right. I mean, I thought about this yesterday. You know, I'm driving through the city and a couple of bad things went against me this week and a couple of things went my way as far as business and my professional life is concerned, and the personal life has got some issues as well. But, you know, when you sort of balance things out at the end of the year, when you start the new year off, you say, hey, you know what? I'm doing okay. I'm healthy. I'm not wealthy, but I'm healthy and I'm eating well. And my, you know, and what can I say? I'm content with life. So I feel pretty good as far as 2022 is concerned. I do want to mention the fact that my boys in South City, of course, South San Francisco High School, where I went to school, they're buzzing on the internet concerned as far as the South City High School pictures are concerned. Man, I really do miss my high school days. And when I look back at that thing, I think of Mr. Pellegrino. And he was the greatest journalism teacher of all time. If there's anybody responsible for me sitting here in the seat right now and doing 38 years of radio, it's Anthony Pellegrino. I'll never forget. We ran a, how can I put this, an underground newspaper. And who do we get to pay for it? The school administration. The principal had to pay for me writing an underground newspaper. They almost went berserk. But they had to do it because me and Mr. P knew the law. Straight up, may you rest in peace, Anthony Pellegrino. Until Sunday, 11 a.m. Pacific time, 2 p.m. Eastern time, this is Ring Talk Live Worldwide coming to you on Sports Byline, iHeartRadio, Sirius XM, Satellite Radio, and Twitch.tv.